Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today we have Jeff Procise, a co-founder of Wintellect. Wintellect is a premier .NET training and consulting company. Jeff Procise is one of the brightest and nicest guys I know, and I'm really happy to have him here. How are you, Jeff?
I'm great. How are you, Jesse?
I'm really good. Really good, and glad you're here because we have much to talk about. There's a whole lot going on in the .NET world, and I know that you've been working over the past couple of years on Silverlight and Windows Phone. Where are you focused these days?
A couple of areas. I'm still doing Silverlight, Jesse, and still love Silverlight, I should say that. But I'm doing a lot of work with Windows Phones right now. I love writing apps for the mobile platform and love teaching classes at Microsoft. In fact, I just got back from Redmond yesterday teaching another phone class. Worked with a bunch of really bright people who have some plans to do some cool things with the phone. But besides the phone, where a lot of my time is being spent today is with HTML5, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe it.
Oh, yeah. And jQuery. I think it's pretty obvious to folks who do HTML5 development, whether they're doing it for browsers, mobile devices, or whatever, that jQuery is your best friend. So I'm actually writing a jQuery course to deliver internally at Microsoft right now. First delivery is late September, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. I've used jQuery for a while, but as you know, when you write a book or a course or something, you dig down and understand things more deeply than you did before, and I'm having a lot of fun with jQuery right now. But especially because it really, really is a great tool for building HTML5 apps. Anyone who's done HTML and JavaScript programming knows that when you write anything but the most trivial JavaScript, it may work in one browser, but it's not going to work in another. But it's so cool with jQuery. You write it, and then you test it in all the browsers, and it just works. I love it for that.
You got to love that. And we had Elijah on talking about jQuery, and we also recently had Ray Bengo talking about Script Junkies. So there certainly is a great deal of focus there. However, you've taken a slightly different angle. You mentioned HTML5 very much in the context of mobile. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it's no secret that there's a lot of buzz out there about HTML5 right now, and that's just as true, if not more true, inside Microsoft than it is outside Microsoft. Everyone at Microsoft is talking about HTML5. They're learning it, they're using it, they're investing in it. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons that it's so interesting right now. One is if you are building browser-based applications, HTML5 just adds so much functionality to browser-based apps that you can leverage without needing a plugin like Silverlight or Flash or something like that. But personally, what I find most interesting about HTML5 is using it to do cross-platform mobile development, because one of the issues we've run into at Wintellect, Jesse, is that increasingly we have customers coming to us and asking us to write mobile apps for them, which we love to do. But increasingly also, the customers want these apps to run on multiple mobile platforms. They want it to run on iPhones. They want it to run on Android phones and sometimes on Windows phones as well. But to do that, we have to write the app three times. And that's the last thing a customer wants to hear. Sure, we're happy to write this for you, make it run on all these platforms, but we're going to have to charge you three times for it. So as mobile development becomes even more and more important, we need a way to do cross-platform mobile development, and HTML5 is one solution to that right now, and in many respects a very good solution. It's a trade-off. We were just talking about this with some Microsoft folks this week. You know, anytime you use one platform to write to multiple devices, you lose a few things because you're sort of writing to the lowest common denominator, but by and large, the fact that you can use HTML5 to build platform-neutral apps and, you know, have them run on all these different phones and pads and tablets and things, I think is very, very exciting.
What does an HTML5 browser-based app look like on the phone? Does that look like an application, or do they have to fire up the browser and navigate to it? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question, and there are a couple of ways to do it. The simplest way to do it, Jesse, is you just deploy the HTML5 application at some URL out on the web, and you have your users point their browser to that, their phone browser. That works, but there's another way to do it that most devs find more interesting, and that is packaging the HTML5 app as a native application for a given platform. so that it can be certified and sold and distributed like a native app. And I'll give you one example. It's different for different platforms, but in Windows Phone 7.1, codenamed Mango, there are lots and lots and lots of new features, of course, but one of the most important, I believe, is that it has an HTML5 browser based on IE9. So if I want to write an HTML5 app for Windows phones, and I want to package it as a native app, what I basically do is take all of my HTML assets, the pages, the style sheets, the JavaScript files, the images, and everything else, and I write them into local storage on that Mango phone. Then the app itself, the native app, is basically a thin shell around that. It's nothing more than a web browser control that you point to the root document in isolated storage. And the cool thing about Mango's web browser control is it'll run that site, that application, from isolated storage just as if it were running it from HTTP URL. So there's basically a little bit of boilerplate code you write for a Windows phone to wrap up all the HTML5 assets. It's then really a Windows phone app. You can submit it to Microsoft for certification. If it's approved, it goes into the marketplace. People can buy it that way. And you use similar strategies for other platforms as well. And there are also tools out there. There's a very popular one called PhoneGap that will basically take all of your HTML5 assets, and with a couple of button clicks, it'll spit out an iPhone package or an Android package, or hopefully one day, a Windows Phone 7 Zap.
That sounds like an extraordinary opportunity to greatly simplify the cross-platform development experience.
Absolutely, because you know, while I may know how to package an HTML5 app as a native app for Windows Phone, I may not be nearly as knowledgeable about that in doing it for Android or iPhone. So it's good to have tools to do that. And something else that these tools do, Jesse, is by and large, they tend to provide a JavaScript layer over some of the native phone features. For example, HTML5 doesn't give you any way to integrate with these phones' accelerometers, but frameworks like PhoneGap usually do. So not only are you getting help, basically one-click help in packaging your HTML5 app as a native mobile app, but you also have the ability to tap into platform-specific features and features that aren't abstracted in HTML5.
And when you point to local storage and you're pointing to an HTML5 page there, presumably that page can also link out to other assets that are on the web, giving you a more dynamic application.
Absolutely. So once you write those assets, let's just take an HTML5 page, for example. You write that HTML5 page to isolated storage on the phone, and then you point the web browser control to that page. That page will almost invariably have links in it. Those can be relative links or they can be absolute links. If they're relative, they're actually resolved by looking to other assets in isolated storage. But if they're absolute, sure, the web browser control is fine with putting an HTTP request on the wire to go fetch an image, a JavaScript file, or something like that.
We're going to have to get you to write up a blog post about how to wrap all of this up into a zap file so that that becomes something that people can do until tools are available for doing it for them.
Yeah, in fact, I did that a few weeks ago for Mango phones. I haven't done it for iPhone or Android, but if you want later, I'll email you a link.
That's terrific. We'll put that up on the page with a number of other links and link to PhoneGap and other tools. Let me take you in a slightly different direction and talk about Silverlight for just a moment. It was back in Mix 07, I believe, that I first saw Silverlight in the keynote given by Scott Guthrie. And I remember I walked out of that room slightly stunned and walked up to you. I've told this story a dozen times to various people. I walked up to you and I said, I need a reality check. And you said, you want to know if the whole world just changed. And it had, at least for me, it had. And I know for you, it was a huge change. And tell me about the first time that you saw Silverlight and the impact that that had.
You know, I remember that. And yeah, the world did change that day, didn't it? So I first saw Silverlight in 2006. I think it was summer of 2006. I was on campus for a little while doing some work, and I bumped into a friend who had his laptop with him, and he said, I have something you need to see. So we sat down and popped open his laptop, and he showed me a very early hacked up build of what was essentially Silverlight 2, even though 1 wasn't out yet. Some devs had forked off a build of CLR, hacked it up, and had it running inside IE. So I saw C# code running in the browser, XAML used to express the UI, And I was utterly blown away. My life changed that day because I knew that's where my focus was going to be in coming years. And then, of course, the team jumped through a few hoops internally to get official approval to build the product that came to be known as Silverlight. 1.0 came out. And it was only later, of course, in 2.0 that they actually built CLR into it, or Core CLR. But I remember that mix very well, and remember having a lot of conversations with folks saying, is this as big as I think it is? And my answer was, yeah, I think it is. This really, really is a game changer.
Do you see HTML5 jQuery as an equivalent sea change in the way we're all going to be doing business?
I do. And I'm not sure that that's entirely a good thing, to be honest. I still have some Silverlight bias, but I do think there's a sea change coming in the way we build software for Microsoft platforms. And I think that HTML5 is a huge, huge part of that.
Well, I certainly agree with you about HTML5 being a game changer. And I'm very excited about what you said about working with HTML5 on Windows Phone. And of course, that's facilitated by the Mango release. Have you been very involved with the Mango release? Is that something that you've been spending a lot of time looking at?
I've been spending a lot of time, as a matter of fact. About half my time in recent months has been spent writing Mango apps, writing demos, figuring out all the stuff, and the other half has been spent on HTML5. And of course, they kind of go together because, like you said, with Mango's web browser, we can run HTML5 apps. But yes, I have spent a lot of time with Mango.
What are the features that you think are key in the new Mango release?
Well, boy, there are a lot of them. One of the key features, obviously, is HTML5 support. I think it was clear to everyone in Windows Phone 7.0 that the lack of HTML5 support was pretty important. But with Mango, that's been fixed. And of course, the team had plans all along. They knew how important HTML5 was going to be. But there's lots of other stuff, too. You know, fast application switching is more of a user enhancement than anything else. The fact that you can resume previously running applications sometimes instantaneously because it doesn't have to go through, most of the time, all the logic to un-tombstone the data and stuff, that's big. You know, we have a relational database in Mango, so instead of using simple name value pairs or virtual files in isolated storage, if you want to store data locally on that phone and you prefer to do it relationally, you have the option of doing that. There's a new API wrapping the contacts and the calendar appointments, so we can do link queries and pull information out from the contacts on the phone. I could go on and on and on. I think in some respects, Mango is the first real release of Windows Phone. I know devs on the team who in the 7.0 timeframe said, yeah, I think we've built a good product, but there's so much more we could have done if we had had the time and resources. And they told me even then, wait till you see the next version. And now that we're seeing it, I'm really excited about it. I mean, being a realist, I think we all know that we have a tough road to hoe with everything that's going on with iPhone and Android, incredibly popular platforms. But I do think, Jesse, that Mango is good enough that it can compete favorably against those platforms. And as one piece of evidence, a few weeks ago, I took my phone, which had been flashed with a build of Mango, and I showed it to my wife, and I showed her all the cool stuff, how you could set up family groups, for example, which would aggregate content from Twitter and Facebook and stuff. And she was so blown away, she said, when can I get one of those? And bear in mind, she's an iPhone user. So if we can sell my wife on it, maybe we can sell everybody else.
I got to say, I like that story. Tell us a bit more about the family groups and how that works, how that gets set up.
Yeah, so it's really cool. One of the many, many things you can do with Mango is take your contacts and you can set up groups with them. So on my phone, for example, I have a group called Family, and I added my wife and my three kids to it. My wife and all three kids are pretty active on Facebook and Twitter and other social networking sites. Once you set up the group, then the phone goes out and goes to their Twitter accounts, their Facebook accounts and stuff, and pulls down fresh content. So when I'm traveling, I'm on the road. If I want to see what's going on with my family, I don't have to pull up Facebook. I just open that group and I see all the stuff they've posted today, all the new photos they've posted and stuff. It's just really, really cool from a consumer perspective.
Another feature that I have found very powerful and that may not be getting quite as much attention just yet is the integrated motion API. Have you been working with that at all?
I absolutely have. Unfortunately, not as much as I'd like because my Windows Phone, which is a Samsung Focus, doesn't support it and doesn't have a compass built in. So I guess I'm going to have to buy a new phone. But No, I like that API. And Jesse, just for folks that may be listening that aren't familiar with it, all Windows phones have a bunch of sensors built into them. All of them have accelerometers, for example. Some of them have compasses in the future. There are other sensors that vendors will be building into these phones, gyroscopes, for example. And the Mango team thought, you know, rather than have separate APIs for all these sensors, and they do have separate APIs for them, they thought, wouldn't it make sense to have one sort of consolidated motion API? So with one API, you could go get data from all of these sensors, and that's what they've done with it. Not all phones support it. Unfortunately, my Samsung Focus, which I really love, it's thin, it's light, it's reasonably performant and stuff. When I query it and say, do you support the motion API, it says no.
Yes, the new phones that will support it need to have, I don't know that they must have both the compass and the gyroscope, but certainly that's where you really see the leverage of the motion API, is when you've got those two plus the accelerometer working together, giving you movement, giving you pitch and roll and yaw and location. Combine that with your GPS location, and you can build some startling apps. I saw a demo of combining all of the motion sensors with the new fuller access to the camera for creating a virtual reality application that was quite impressive.
That does sound cool. I agree with you. It's really the sensors in a phone that make some stunning applications possible. And, you know, the good news is, even if you have an older phone like mine that doesn't technically support the motion API, a lot of the data that comes from the new sensors like gyroscope can actually be obtained from the accelerometers. Just that you have to do a little bit of trigonometry, a few sines and cosines, to get yaw, pitch, and roll from the accelerometer. But you can get it. It's there.
Right, you just have to work a little bit harder, and so your application has to fall back gracefully to manage the phone that doesn't have these new sensors. But this is always, you know, this is always the dilemma, which is that you want to move forward, and moving forward means adding new features, and then you also have the issue of backward compatibility. And one of the things that we're discovering is that the migration from pre-Mango applications to running on Mango is fairly simple. Have you been working with migrating your applications into Mango? Have you run into any difficulties or any issues?
I have been migrating apps, and I have run into a few issues, nothing major. For the most part, the vast majority of the apps that I've brought forward from 7.0 to 7.1 have just worked, but there are a few issues. For example, I've got an app that I like to show around. It's a photo extras demo that integrates with the photo store on the phone, lets you pull up a photo and fix red eyes in the photographs. And they changed the way a photo's extra application is registered in Mango. They've basically gotten rid of the old extras.xml file and replaced that with a little bit of goo that you put in the application manifest. So, you know, that was a breaking change, but once I figured out what the breaking change was, it literally took 2 minutes to fix it. I'll have to say, so far, my experiences have been very, very positive in bringing apps forward to Mango.
Well, this is all great stuff. It does make me realize that you've been at this for quite a while. Tell me a little bit about how Wintellect came to be and how you formed that company, and when was that, and what led you to doing that?
Well, we've been around since 2000. We formed the company, I believe, in the spring of 2000, and it was, to me, it was the culmination of a lot of things, Jesse. Long story short, I got out of school in 1982, and a lot of folks that know me know that my background, my formal education isn't in computer science, it's in engineering. And I did the engineering thing for a few years and, to be honest, found it a little bit boring. But about the same time I got out of school, the PC revolution was starting, and I went out and took money I didn't have and bought myself a computer and just got absolutely hooked. So in 1990, I made a major, major career change. I left engineering for good and decided to see if I could make it on my own, writing software, writing books and stuff like that. I'd been writing articles for a few years for PC Magazine and Microsoft Systems Journal, as it was called at the time, but I wanted to try my hand at writing a book. So I basically spent the 90s writing programming books, and that sort of led to getting on the conference circuit, doing a lot of speaking and stuff, which I was really uncomfortable with at the time. I was a really, really bad speaker in the early days and wasn't sure I could ever get better. But it's like anything else. Practice helps a lot, and I still have a lot of areas I can improve in, but at least I'm a lot more comfortable doing it. But around 95 or 96, I started doing training engagements for clients and found I really liked it. I really enjoy teaching, whether it's through a book, a magazine article, a blog entry, or standing in front of that audience and teaching live. I really, really love teaching. So in 2000, me and Jeffrey Richter and John Robbins got together. We had all been doing training together and had been friends for a number of years, and said, you know what, let's hitch our wagons together and see if we can't build something really fun. So we got some help from a fellow named Louis Frazier. He's not a technical guy, but he's a high-powered business guy. And the four of us together started the company. And basically, for the last 10 years, we've been working on building that. We have a wonderful staff of developers. They live all over the country, although there's several of them down in Atlanta, some out in the Redmond and Seattle area, too. And it's been a ton of work, but it's also been a ton of fun.
Well, you've built quite a reputation over that time. And certainly you and Jeff Richter are very well known in terms of your books and the writing that you've done on systems and on, I believe you had a book on MFC and on Win95, going back to Win95, which is, I think, when you first came to my attention. So there's a whole lot of folks who learned from the two of you about the fundamentals of Windows going back a good bit. I recently had Charles Petzold on, and he sort of completes the triumvirate of the folks that a lot of us learned or initially cut our teeth on Windows programming with.
Yeah, Charles is an old friend of mine. We talk often and get to see each other occasionally as well. Those were the good old days, Jesse. Things have changed a lot. But yeah, it's funny when I still to this day, I'll be walking across campus or talking to someone and they'll say, hey, I learned how to write MFC code from your book. And I tell them, you know what, that tells me old guy, because that book was a long time ago. But
well, I am an old guy and proud of it. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you this, and I often tell people this too, especially at Microsoft when I'm starting off a lecture about Windows Phone or something. When I got into this industry in the early 80s, Jesse, it was like the wild, wild west. Everyone knew that there was a lot of software that needed to be written. Everyone knew there were going to be companies built and millionaires made, and it was just as exciting as it could be. And over time, our industry got a little bit less exciting because we all sort of grew up and it became a business. But an interesting thing has happened. Mobile development has restored that excitement for me, because I think mobile is where a lot of the action is going to be for the next 5 to 10 years. And I think, I look at my Windows Phone and I think there are going to be companies built from this and there are going to be millionaires made. And wow, there's so many apps that need to be written that haven't been written. So in some ways, I think we've come full circle. And I'll have to tell you, I think I'm having more fun in our industry right now than I have since probably the mid to late 1980s.